You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and tonight's Clear Spot is a special hour-long episode of I'm Ready for My Close-Up, looking at the 15-year history of one of the best science fiction characters you may never have heard of. Professor Bernice Summerfield, middle name allegedly Surprise, and known as Benny to her friends, started off as a Doctor Who companion in the novels published by Virgin after the cancellation of the original TV series in 1989, and then, having travelled with the Doctor for over 60 novels, got a series of her own in print and then as radio-style plays released on CD to specialist shops, the next one of which, The Wake, sounds like this.
Should talk about Jason. I should tell you about everything that we... that he... Sorry. I just can't. Not yet. Give me time. Irving Braxiatel, on the other hand. First met Brax 1,000 years in the future. I guess that would have been about 15 years ago. Nice guy called Gilmarnock was showing me the Garden of Whispers.
Every single statue is visible from the summer house, all 47 of them. And it's also the best place to hear the whispers.
Mandrine, the Archolite goddess of plenty.
Actually, it's pronounced Mandrine. I'm sorry if I startled you. I, too, was admiring the view. Although I cannot stay long, I'm afraid I shall have to return to my researches soon.
It is quite a view.
This summer house was constructed by Dupok. He worked from a holographic model. In fact, the whole site was modelled as a similarity before construction began.
An interesting technique, although rather expensive on such a scale, I would imagine.
I should imagine so.
Hardly original, though.
Though?
Much of the design is, after all, based on the ancient Palace of Versailles. Richard Meek worked from three-dimensional models when he created the small buildings in the grounds there. He gave the models of the Temple of Love and the Belvedere to Marie Antoinette.
Touché.
In tonight's show, I'm looking at the 15-year history of Benny Summerfield, why she's such a well-loved character by aficionados and remains popular, if somewhat neglected by the general public, to this day. I'm talking to the actress who plays Benny, Lisa Bowerman, plus Stephen Fuel, the actor who plays her husband Jason, and Simon Gurrier, the current producer of The Range. Later, Simon himself will be interviewing actress Sophie Aldred, who played Benny's predecessor Ace on TV and joined her for a couple of adventures on CD, and Gareth Roberts, a writer now known for his recent Doctor Who adventure The Shakespeare Code and episodes of The Sarah Jane Adventures, who wrote one of the early novels that featured Benny. Also, sci-fi critic and writer Graham Slight will be talking to author Paul Cornell about creating the character, and there's a look behind the scenes at a recent recording. First up, here's my interview with producer Simon Gurrier.
Today we're in the studio at the recording of August's Benny release. You're the producer. I mean, what kind of an overview do you have in that role? I mean, checking the scripts, the kind of direction, the emotional content of each one?
Yes. My job has been to commission scripts, edit scripts, get scripts out to actors, get the directors involved. I've tended to leave the actual casting to the directors themselves, but I do get approval of that, which is really just, yes, that sounds fine. And then I come in with the on the day and basically administer, so looking after checks, contracts, answering questions, a lot of the, you know, it's good for the director to have somebody to ask questions of, do the washing up, do the reading in of small lines, things like that, and then all the sort of just supervising the post-production, making sure that that's all going on, keeping the director and the sound engineers chatting to each other and making sure that that goes along, making sure people meet their deadlines, and then finally getting copies of product to the contributors.
That's
sort of where it ends.
So, I mean, because the reason I paused before asking producer, because I suppose your job covers a great many more roles than that of an ordinary producer, particularly these days when the word producer seems to become inextricably linked with showrunner because of American TV shows.
Technically, I'm the showrunner on Benny.
Yeah. The kind of people who buy the Benny CDs on a regular basis, I mean, do you find that you need to keep peppering the Doctor Who references back in because it's ultimately a Doctor Who spin-off, or it's got enough of an identity in itself that it's just kind of, it's nice in the nostalgic way but not necessarily a necessity?
Good question. Benny has to stand on her own.
Yeah.
But I think that's true of any of the spin-off ranges. Dalek Empire has to stand on its own. Gallifrey has to stand on its own.
But I suppose something like Dalek Empire, for example, the only thing that it's got is the Daleks. There don't seem to be many other kind of references. You can just enjoy it by itself.
Well, yes. Benny's got a lot of history herself. Mm. That's the thing. Benny's got a lot of history with the Doctor in the New Adventures, but she's, you know, she's been around for 15 years.
Yeah,
that's a sizable. We are talking. She's been around as long as Doctor Who was when the Remus operation.
The amount of time that she's been around without the Doctor is longer than she was with.
Oh, definitely,
you know.
Definitely. So there is a lot of backstory. So we are involved, especially this year because it's the 15th anniversary. I've tried to put something in that gives a bit of a sense of the history and stuff. So we've got everything from Caddy Arthur Lethbridge Stewart appears in the Final Amendment. Ros and Chris appear briefly in cameo in the two Jasons for
good.
Various reasons.
Right, only in book form then.
Yes. Gary Russell makes an appearance in The Judas Gift. He plays the newsreader. So high and low, there's various bits and pieces. But yeah, it does need to stand on its own. The kind of thing that's tricky this year is how much you can listen to any of this year's plays on their own.
Mm.
But I have seen it as it's a six-part story. And I think that's the only... I've tried to make each story hang together so that you can listen to it on its own. But it is designed to be episodic. And there are cliffhangers and there are so on and so on. And I think it's more rewarding that way. That said, Benny has largely in the past been standalone stories, and it will be again next year. There will be obviously a kind of ongoing character thing, but the stories will be designed as standalone.
Well, I mean, all sorts of kinds of sci-fi have done that before, gone from episodic to serialised and back again, so I mean...
Yes. And it's partly because my brief was specifically to tie up loose ends and to deal with the on-running stories and to come to some kind of satisfying conclusion, because things had, large and small, things had been left on one, you know, on one side and things.
And so, I mean, you know, I can say this as a sci-fi fan myself, that many TV series that have come and gone over the years that you expect to have a beginning, a middle and end just never did. And it's incredibly frustrating, so it's good that you're actually doing this, even though it's going to keep going.
Yes. I mean, I was kind of frustrated as a listener before I even, you know, was writing for Big Finish or anything like that, that there were several things that were set up that were never really referred to again. And certainly after The Mirror Effect, which is a absolutely fantastic play, and does all sorts of things and turns over everything you think is going on with Benny and Brax and the characters and Jason and whatever, and then it's kind of never referred to again, and there are reasons why, and there's a get out clause and whatever. And I wanted to say, no, let's confront this, let's actually deal with it and face it head on. And I hope, you know, I've certainly found it rewarding to do that. I think it's generated some really interesting stuff, but then I would say that because I was in charge.
Going back to my previous question, not that, you know, I hope that people ever stop buying your ranges, but do you find that people who do buy in Benny are like diehard Benny fans, or they buy Doctor Who ones as well? I mean, not that you give out questionnaires or anything, but
I suspect that pretty much everybody who is getting Benny is getting Doctor Who in one form or another. I do know people who only get Benny, which
right.
I have one particular correspondent who thinks Benny is better than anything else that Big Finish does, which is very gratifying. I think he just wants a job. But yeah, we're a niche thing. We are smaller, we do sell less than Doctor Who. I think that's a standard thing. My job is to ensure that what we are doing is from our point of view, is not a minority interest, that it is serious, it is rewarding, it is worth sticking with. And there are a lot of the things that I've been trying to do in the past is to make it more rewarding, is to pay that off, to make sure that people who've been sticking with it do actually get some payoff and things.
Do you find new fans coming to Benny after all this time?
Yes. Yes. I went to LA in February this year to the Gallifrey convention, and was a bit bowled over by how enthusiastic people were just generally about everything, which was lovely. And I got my brother to come in and shoot a 5-minute behind the scenes documentary thing, just so I had something to show people, because I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I wasn't sure how recognised Big Finish would be, how recognised Benny would be, and so on and so on and so on. And the response was absolutely extraordinary. Loads of people really asking questions, who'd been following it, who had things to ask, but also people asking where they should start. You know, they're going, oh, I'm aware there's a lot of stuff, and yeah, where could they get in and catch up and things. And that is still ongoing. So, yeah, that's been really good.
I mean, I suppose also it's what Big Finish started off doing, the Benny adaptations, even for Doctor Who.
Yes, although there's an argument that people already knew of Benny before that, and she'd come through the books and things, so there was a following.
But you know, from that first CD, even though it was a novel adaptation, I wouldn't expect, you know, the company to say, oh, we'll just sell this to people who have read the books. They, you know, from the start, you'd want people to buy a new range.
Yes, and you can see a very conscious, I mean, this is years before I've evolved, but you can see a very conscious effort to get Doctor Who fans involved. Every one of those first six stories has somebody from old Doctor Who in there. I think that's right.
Yeah, rings a bell.
Yeah, maybe Just Ward doesn't. But
although kind of in retrospect, it had Maggie Sable, wasn't it?
And Mark Gatiss and stuff. But you know, there was a definite attempt to involve people, and they also tried things where they were getting people to subscribe, and you got a subscriber offer and the Buried Treasures CD and things like that. So there are all sorts of efforts to get people involved. But also, it's funny. There's things like, just things like Survival coming out on DVD and Lisa being on the documentary and stuff. I found people.
Did she plug this range at all?
No, well, you know, I'm sure she did. She's very good at that. And I'm sure they just snipped it out. But people have investigated Big Finish through, or Benny through that. I think I'm already seeing people asking questions as a result of Happy Endings being adapted and things.
Right. Human nature.
Yeah, yes, human nature. And because the novel, which features Benny originally, is available on the BBC website, I'm rather hoping that that will have an impact to people. It's got a fantastic series of notes by Paul Cornell, which is really insightful, very, very interesting, involved in the whole process of it and who everyone is. I think that's fantastic. And as well as that, you've got The Dying Days, which also features Benny as well. Two of the best new adventures.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's great. I you know, you couldn't really ask for more. The real problem is that the new series is you know, what it giveth it taketh away, which is that it makes a lot of attention for Doctor Who, for other things, for spin-off series, for what's been going on between the, you know, the interregnum years or whatever you want to call them.
Well, at its most basic level, the TV version of Human Nature doesn't have Benny in it.
Yes. But also, there's a lot of other stuff. So Big Finish is, you know, Big Finish is competing not just with other books, with other audio plays, with other whatever. It's competing with the Dalek cake. It's competing with the Dalek mugs. It's competing, you know, there has got to be a limit somewhere to what the dedicated fan or you know, listener or whatever can actually buy each month. And that means, you know, that does mean that you have to think very seriously about how rewarding what you're doing is and stuff. And I hope Benny's always had a very particular, you know, she was invented for new adventures which were specifically aimed at a more adult audience and stuff. So we've immediately got a tradition of doing things that Doctor Who would never normally do. And standing out on our own, we can do things that the Doctor Who series wouldn't do, that the Big Finish's Doctor Who series can't do. And that gives us a certain amount of freedom and areas to play in and things of that sort. So hopefully we provide something that nobody else can, while still having a similar flavour and a tradition and a, you know, and a back history and so on. So that you know, I think it's a really strong, I think it's a really strong series.
The play you're recording today, The End of the World,
yes,
is written by Dave Stone.
That's right. Basically, what Dave has done, which I'm really impressed with, is that he's delivered a novel and a play that interweave and take Jason right back to the beginning, the first time we meet him, and the two Jasons retells his first meeting with Benny in a, and some of it's as it is in Death and Diplomacy, and some of it's more embellished and some of it's different and so on, at the same time telling another story as well, and there's also bits that are repeated in the book and in the play and things like that. So there's a real kind of sense of finality and but also closure to the character, which is perfect, really. You know, we were recording earlier the final scenes and stuff, and I was getting goosebumps, and it's terrible. You know, I've been reading this stuff and I've been editing it and reworking it and arguing it left and right and back and forward and so on, and then you get into the studio and it's you know, it just lifts everything when it's played. So I hope it's all satisfying and effective and things, but you know, it's not really for me to judge.
It's something that seems to be quite popular in Japan, taking an ongoing narrative between different medium, like having an episode of a cartoon, a live-action movie, a computer game, and people accept that it's the same characters. But with Benny, you have a story that continues both in the books and in the audio plays. Do you have to be mindful that maybe some people are buying one and not the other?
Yes, it's very difficult to judge. It's very difficult to judge. I am aware that there are people who only get the CDs. I am aware that there are people who only get the books. There are also people who dip in and out of both.
Mm.
And will maybe get two CDs and a book a year or something, depending on how the reviews are and that, things of that sort. So you try, as I said before, you try and make everything intelligible and satisfying on its own, but more rewarding if you follow the whole thing. There were arguments about season 7 that it felt like people were, even if people got everything, they still weren't getting the whole story.
It's in the parallel universe as a TV show as well.
Yes. And, you know, and you should have bought the T-shirt in which everything was explained. Yes, I think that's a very fair criticism.
With any kind of narrative that's set in a particular world, even if it's set in our world, something that's supposedly, like, you know, if you watch EastEnders, there must be a certain awareness of what's going on in the world around it, and you wouldn't expect everyone who watches an episode of EastEnders to read every daily newspaper from page to page or be aware of everything that's going on in culture, so there will be references that they miss.
Yes. You see how I'm going. My solution with season 7 was to suggest that some time had passed between each play. I think that's what threw people, that there would be a cliffhanger or there would be a development and then the next play would start not immediately after but sometime after, so that you would have to work out where you were at the beginning of each play. I kind of thought that that was the best way to play it. I'm not sure that it necessarily was. I think we may have confused people a bit. I think we may have left people feeling, especially if you were only getting the CDs, that maybe you felt that you were missing something that had been in the books and, you know, that sort of thing. So we've tried it slightly differently this year, where the CDs run as a series, which hopefully run from play to play to play, and the books work around them so that they add texture to what's going on and have their own stories to tell. But if you're just listening to the CDs, there's a much more coherent, this is a 6-part series and the books are kind of a bonus. That said, I think if you get the whole lot, I think there's a lot to reward that. You know, there's all sorts of stuff in the two Jasons which prefigures and sets up and plays off against things that happen in the audios and stuff. So
I'm talking to actress Lisa Bowman, who plays Professor Bernie Summerfield. You've been doing this part for 9 years now?
Yes, I'm still completely amazed. As I've said to various people before, it feels like a couple of weeks, and then I look at the photographs in the first episode and I go, oh, yes, it really has been 9 years. So, but it's remarkable, and I'm delighted. It's very rare that a part goes on for that long, and you would have thought that the interest levels would have dipped slightly, but extraordinarily, it isn't, which I think is a testament to how popular the character is, and What a great character she is.
I mean, it's been 9 years, but only, I think, about 40 CDs. But then I suppose that's kind of the British way, that we always do short runs of things, because in America, 40 episodes is 2 years' worth of something. But since it's been that amount of time, presumably there's still been as much development of the character as you might expect.
Absolutely. I think, to be honest, it's like the law of diminishing returns. If you put out too much product, I'm going to be slightly controversial here, it's rather like soap operas going daily for 5 days a week. There's only a certain amount of storylines that are credible that you can actually get through in that amount of time. So the advantage with Benny is that it's ranged from 4 CDs a year to, in the last couple of years, it's been 6 CDs. That's mainly to do with tying up story arcs that have been going on for the last 18 months or so. But I think it's an advantage because it gives editors and producers the space to really give her development in the right way and not just for changes for change's sake. So it suits my point of view fantastically.
If I was to describe the character to someone who didn't know the range at all, it's very hard to describe it without mentioning sort of fictional characters that have come after, say, a cross between, I don't know, Bridget Jones and Lara Croft.
Yeah.
But Benny predates them. It's a shame that she's such a strong female character that not that many people know about her.
It is quite extraordinary. I mean, it's been relatively well documented. When I first knew that I was going to be seen for this part, my friend Stephen Fuel, who actually ended up being in the series playing Jason Kane, who's her sort of erstwhile on-off husband. I obviously knew about various Doctor Who bits and bobs, but he said to me, I went to see him in a play, and he said to me afterwards, "Are you being seen for Bernice Summerfield?" And I said, "Oh, my God, I couldn't remember her name." He said, "She's an icon. You've got to play her." And of course, he'd read all the novels, and to a very specific readership, certainly, and also within the Doctor Who world, she was this huge character that I had no idea about. And as you say, it is a pity, in terms of the broader audience, that she hasn't been quite as well known, because she is an extremely well-rounded character. I mean, when I first started it, obviously, excuse me, I had no back reference to her at all, other than the fact that, you know, people personify her as a hard-drinking, hard-living, you know, slightly wild character. But when I first read the first script, I have to be honest and hold my hand up and confess I hadn't read any of the books. And the first audition was a script called Oh No It Isn't, which is the very first one, which of course was an adaptation of one of the new adventure novels that Virgin used to publish. And I thought, she was really good because there was humour. She was very strong. There were no concessions to her being very girly. But at the same time, she wasn't too scary. She wasn't too much of a ball breaker. And I think that can be, especially when you're writing what is commonly known as strong women, there's always a tendency to go a little bit over the top. But she's got her humanity. She's got her humour. She drinks. She has a good time. But at the same time, she has a very firm moral code. She knows what's right and what's wrong and fights for it. And in terms of kind of adventurous, I think, you know, she's fantastic. You know, say predating all those really well-known characters. I think there is a wider audience out there. But I'm not biased at all, of course.
Well, I mean, it almost feels like the whole Tomb Raider thing has now gone off the ball. No one really sort of talks about Lara Croft anymore. Looking at possible other inspirations for Benny, I suppose Karen Allen's character in Raiders of the Lost Ark, who's meant to be coming back in the new film, is a good parallel.
Absolutely. I mean, it's funny that these sort of characters do crop up, certainly in film context, from time to time. There's Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's always somebody in things like Romancing the Stone and people striding around in khakis and jungles and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, this has got a sci-fi overtone. Yeah, yeah. I don't know quite whether she was a groundbreaker, but for this strong a female character to have been around for what is now 15 years, obviously in print she was around for as long as that. I think it's becoming, I hate the word relevant, but I think she is becoming more relevant because, you know, I think emancipation, we're past the point of having to go too far in order to come back. Should we say, it went too far, but we need to come back again. Oddly, she seems to be a lot more groundbreaking than a lot of the characters you see on television, who are still stuck in this, either you're a ball breaker in a suit or you are a council house mum with 15 kids. And finding a normal, interesting character that has no particular concessions to being a girly, it's really quite refreshing and fun to play. Over the years, she has developed so much as a character. Again, children change people's perspectives. You know, you're suddenly a responsible person, responsible for another individual. And in terms of Bernice's character, that is no different. You know, her moral perspective is still the same. But she's had to tone things down purely because she would have killed herself by the time she'd have got to this stage. I think in terms of how you look at it in a modern context, yes, I think there is. You know, there's a lot of arguments about binge drinking and irresponsible drinking. But at the same time, I don't think you can be too puritanical about things. If you get a bit pompous and self-righteous and stand yourself on a pedestal being the moral guardian, any drama that starts getting polemic like that can get incredibly boring. So she drinks when she wants to drink, but she just doesn't do it all the time, you know.
Well, and also, I mean, I've heard interviews with you before. You've said that it was nice, even when you started playing the character, that she had this strong literary history beforehand. Because presumably, as an actress, when you take any role, there's only so much you can get out of the script. And, you know, if you've got a good director, maybe they can say, oh, this happened in the past with so-and-so. But at least with Benny, there's just so many avenues you can go down.
I think that's another reason why the character has maintained the interest over so many years. When I first started, I did more asking than reading. Like most writers, I suppose, everybody has a slightly different take on her. Some have been more successful than others, because there's another stream that, of course, is very strong with her, is her humour. And the humour and the bantery one-liners she comes out with tend to be reserved for when she's in moments of great danger. And the temptation is, of course, to get too clever with that and, you know, overwrite that sort of humour. But when I asked about her to friends, first of all, they all said, oh, she's very humorous, she has this very pragmatic approach to things, and all the things we talked about earlier on. And when I first read that script, wild and wacky as it is, because it isn't. It's set in the world of Panto. Don't ask, just listen. I thought, what on earth is this? But the way, the syntax, the way that she used the language, the character, was so extraordinarily strong that there was kind of no two ways to play it. Like most actors, when you pick up a script, depending on the quality of the writing, it either flies off the page at you, or you have a great difficulty finding a hook onto, you know, to latch a character. And Benny was so well-rounded, I had absolutely no... There was no other way to play her, and it was wonderful. I just clocked into it immediately. You know, I'm very, very lucky. But she's a strong character.
I mean, when you started playing Benny, obviously she'd appeared in 66 books or so at that point, which suggested that she had an enduring appeal. But did you think that 9 years later?
Not at all. Actually, I was a bit naughty, because I went along to this interview for Bernice, not thinking that it was... I'd never heard of the character. I knew it was sort of Doctor Who related. Big Finish had only just started, and of course, you know, Jason, Gary and Nick, you know, very professional, but they were effectively, you know, guys who'd known each other since they were 13 and were all Doctor Who fans. So, you know, you have a certain perspective of what you're going to expect. So I turned up in Nick Briggs' front room with a microphone strapped to an uplighter, and I thought, oh, this is encouraging. You know, I was used to good old BBC, you know, radio drama. Okay. But I thought it was going to be a job that would last 2 weeks. And I turned up to the first recording, and it was all done post-production, which, again, I wasn't used to. And it was a really manky studio down in Elephant, in a basement in Elephant and Castle. It was shocking. And with a sort of flea-ridden cat, you know, strolling around. And I heard the first CD, and they've got a very good editor called Alistair Locke, who was one of their first editors. And this remarkably fantastic kind of layered sound came back at me, and I thought, oh my god, this is a dreadful thing to say, this is better than I expected. But I hadn't even told my agent about this job. You know, I thought, well, it'll last a couple of weeks, and it was great fun to do. And then, of course, they got very good responses when we first launched them. I mean, I was a bit alarmed when Gary said to me on the first day of recording, he said, now, we're going to launch you at this convention here, and then we're going to, you want to do an interview with that magazine here. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I haven't told my agent about this. He's going to hit the roof. But I thought, oh, it's all right. We won't see them. But then, of course, the BBC heard them latterly, and I knew the company had been looking, it's like the holy grail to these guys, looking for the license to do proper Doctor Who, the classic Doctor Who audios. And, of course, Benny Summerfield, because of the quality of the production and the production values and the writing, I think the BBC was suitably impressed and then gave them permission to do the license, at which point I thought, well, goodbye, Bernice, you know, it's not going to happen. But I really have to thank Gary Russell for this, because he really fought for Bernice to be kept on. And, I mean, the listenership, it's always going to be, at that stage, it was always going to be a niche market. But they were a very loyal niche market, and they hadn't really ever lost any money on it. It's always been a smallish market, but the quality is always kept up, and the listeners have been fantastically loyal. So I was kept on quietly in the background, and weirdly, we're still going after 9 years. I won't say weirdly, because actually, and also obviously they publish the books as well in tandem with the audios. But there's been some fantastically good writing on it, and I feel extremely fortunate to be in the position to be able to you know, develop a character over that long a time. Extraordinary.
Well, presumably the fans are, you know, always happy with it, because otherwise the range wouldn't have kept going, you know, for this long. But at the same time, I guess there must be a desire to get more casual listeners in from time to time. A few years ago, there seemed to be a conscious effort to put more Doctor Who monsters in it, you know. But I guess producers come and go, and writers come and go. But the core thing about it actually is kind of you and the other reoccurring characters. And it must be increasingly feeling like, you know, like a rep company that gets back together. And
it,
you know,
it is. I mean, actually, the regular company only really kicked in after the, an audio called The Mirror Effect. They placed the stories on this planet called the Braxiatel Collection, which is run by another Time Lord who is collecting artifacts from across the universe. And we've got the marvellous Miles Richardson playing Braxiatel, who is just fantastic. And over the years, we've got this little core of actors. It's probably about three, four, about five of us. And it's proved to be extremely popular. I mean, obviously, there's always nice to have the odd adventure where she goes off and does her own thing. So, you know, you don't get too straight-jacketed by the format. But it has been amazing that the fans just keep going on for it. But again, I think it's a testament to the producers that we've had, because it's very easy for these sort of things to get stuck in a rut. But a combination of the producers and the character herself has produced this really interesting... And I'm passionate about the fact that I do think... I mean, obviously, again, not that I'm biased, but I do think that there is a wider audience for her. It's always very difficult, because you've got this thing about her history coming from the Doctor Who end of the science fiction world, and you get into the realms of licensing and who's allowed to be in what story, and we're not allowed to mention the Doctor and all this sort of stuff. Except, once, very subtly, probably by mistake. But I would really like to think that a lot of the other Doctor Who fans would discover her, because I think she's become so much more than just a Doctor Who companion. I really do. And occasionally you see things on the internet where they've just dipped their toe in the water, and as long as they've come on at the right stage of the series, I think they're always kind of mildly surprised, because their expectations have been damned somewhat, you know. And in terms of people who aren't Doctor Who fans, I just think they are very good allegorical stories. Yeah. And they're very human. They're not too full of science fiction-ese that you think, oh, God, I don't understand a word of what's going on. There's not too much jargon going on, because I suppose she's dealing with archaeological artefacts most of the time, you know. And I just love them, you know. Great stories.
Well, I mean, I suppose a very obvious parallel on TV is the fact that they've given Sarah Jane Smith her own TV show. Which does have, you know, cameo by K-9 in the pilot. The Slitheen came back for the second episode. But when in interviews, you know, Elizabeth Sladen has said, it's great that they've fleshed out my character and made her more three-dimensional, you know.
I mean, it's always going to be a tricky one, that, because as the companion in a Doctor Who format, you are there as a cipher to a certain extent, but somebody to bounce his morality off in terms of men or women playing that part. They are our own perceptions of things, you know, and his take on life is so different from the normal human beings. But in the context of Doctor Who, one can never really dominate the other. The problem, obviously, in the early days was the companion just tripped over things and said, oh dear Doctor, what's that? And he'll solve it, or he'll tell them, and you know, he's there as a sort of to illustrate situations where, by if you actually do have an opportunity, you suddenly stumble on these companions that actually have been rather well written. You've got the Sarah Jane characters, I mean, Lena to a certain extent. I'm just trying to think. I mean, Rose in the most recent ones. You know, they are real people. They're not just screamers, if you see what I mean. Just got to be careful how I say that. You hope that producers will be savvy enough to recognise when they've stumbled across somebody that's actually got a bit more mileage in it. And as long as the Doctor doesn't get too offended by being completely ignored, you know, they go off and do their own series. It's fine. I mean, I think also you're in a bit of a danger when you come to franchises like Doctor Who that you don't overdo the spin-offs, because you think, oh, well, there's another spin-off here and another spin-off there. As long as they pick the right not again, it sounds like I'm hugely biased, but as long as they pick the right characters and they've got decent writers, then frankly, you know, there's so many characters that have been thrown up from that series, which just is a testament to how strong Doctor Who is, because it's a writer-led series. It always has been, which is why I think it's been such a success this time around as well. You know? And certainly from Bernice's point of view, she's got a background in books, and she is a very well written character, and there's no substitute for it.
Well, and also, in a way, the Benny series is a lot like Doctor Who in the sense that the format is very flexible. You can do horror one, you can do sci-fi next, you can do comedy for the other. And I was saying to you before I started recording that Douglas Adams casts a very long shadow on Benny, that particularly Dave Stone's writing. Not, I mean, he probably gets this a lot and is sick to death of it. But to the extent that the Braxia Tale collection was a throwaway line from one of his stories, and there was a character called Lintilla, played by Rula Lenska, who is an archaeologist investigating a planet destroyed by Shuth, you know.
But I had no idea that that was the case. But as you say, the format is so fantastically flexible. Not only have you got the opportunity to do the different monsters, aliens side of things, certainly within the audience. I mean, we've had historical ones. We've had, as you say, very comedy ones. The nice thing about Benny is that, again, the humour thing, you can go completely high comedy and still get away with it. The extraordinary thing is also is you can do both within the same CD. I mean, you can flip from tragedy to comedy really easy without it sounding too crass. I know sometimes it's a bit... but that is an advantage. Douglas Adams is a wonderful writer, and his turn of phrase and his humour were just bar none. And if I'm aware that the writers... are indebted to him, then I'm very grateful that it's him that they're indebted to and nobody else, because they've done a good job on that.
And then I suppose the other writer who's cast a very long shadow over Benny is the creator, Paul Cornell, who comes back from time to time and more recently enabled you to have a go at the Daleks. And I suppose in both senses that must have been you know, a great thing.
Paul has written very epic stories. Obviously, you know, he's fully aware of the character. I mean, I think he's been as pleased as anyone else is that the character has been fleshed out by other writers as well as himself. Because I suppose when you have a creation, it's like your baby. You don't want to see it, you know, really kiboshed by people who don't quite understand her. But the fact is, he had the character off pat from the start, and any developments that other writers have been doing owe everything to his creation in the first place. The Daleks was a great 2 CD epic, fantastic, and it also followed on from a book called Life During Wartime.
Yeah.
And the whole sweep of that story arc was fantastic. Paul wrote Oh No It Isn't, which is this great, broad, hysterically funny script, and then comes up with a sort of a two-hander called Closure, which is about torture. And that's the... joy is probably the wrong word, but that's the joy of the character, to be able to deal with so many moralistic... Well, say moralistic is completely the wrong word. To deal with so many storylines on so many levels. And be able to deal with them intelligently and not in a crass way, as I said earlier, is a huge testament to him. That's really good.
Next, you'll hear Graham Slight's interview with Benny's creator Paul Cornell, who recently adapted his novel Human Nature as a 2-part episode of Doctor Who for David Tennant's Doctor and his companion Martha Jones, but which originally featured Sylvester McCoy's Doctor and Benny as his companion in print.
I was just about to ask the question about strong female characters, which you sort of preempted.
It's interesting. People say that about what I do. I've never really thought about it until people started asking. Bernice Summerfield, my central character, my sort of the character who's most closely expresses how I feel. Simon here is the editor of the Bernice range now for Big Finish. She's been going 15 years now, isn't it?
15 years in October.
Right. And it's nice to have a spin-off range that goes for 15 years. I think this is because, to some extent, I did not think there was any difference between my voice and a female voice. She's me in a frock, is what I always say. And I think the things that make us similar are much more important, certainly in terms of character and narrative voice, than those things that make us different. I think male writers who try very hard to, oh, I must make her very female, kind of miss something,
And so it must be an interesting experience to have other people play around with your character. And
well, one of the nice things about Bernice is she seems play-aroundable proof. That other writers just get her and do things which sometimes surprise me, but at the same time I find really in character. I don't think there's anything that's ever outraged me. People tried. The New Adventures group of Doctor Who writers who are at war with each other and love each other and fight and break up and all that, some people deliberately did try to do things with Bernice which they thought I'd hate. But usually, things outside the envelope kind of get tucked back into the next book, and the author of the next book goes, well, that was a strange adventure, thought Bernice, where I it had my hair done in dreadlocks. I can't remember. What are the really strange things? Can you remember?
She gets killed.
Gets killed, yes. That's yes. Kind of extreme. Couple of times, yeah.
She becomes a god.
Yeah.
She becomes the president of Earth. Oh, no, that hasn't happened yet, sorry. She is cloned. The divorce is the big one.
So, just really the things that happen in anybody's life.
Yeah. And I mean, how can I put it? How much do you want to preordain her future, and how much are
These days, not at all.
Okay.
It's a long leash, basically.
I guess they do what I like.
Yeah. And I could, if I liked, pull it all in and deny them the license and bring it all to a crumbling halt.
Have you seen the contract?
Every couple of years I can. But, you know, I've had offers. But that's nice. I like it when he's afraid.
And so this character of yours from, as you say, 15 years old, is now, I guess, out there in the culture.
Absolutely.
I mean, how do you feel about that? Is that something you...
Well, what I really like are the knock-ons. Like, there was a character in Emmerdale for about 10 years called Bernice because of her. As the New Adventures authors spread out into television, loads of the in-jokes took on lives of their own.
I'm now just wondering if the vicar in League of Gentlemen is named for
the
same reason.
Yeah, the vicar of Bernice, okay, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right. Thinking of Love and War, your new adventure, I mean, that's more or less constructed around, I was going to say, the Wrath of Khan thing, but does the need of the many outweigh the need of the few? You know,
right.
Or the one. I mean, did that start with the premise, or did that start with setting or Bernice?
It's hard to say where that began. I think that was the need to get rid of a companion, and wouldn't it be good if a companion actually left because they were very pissed off? Never been done before. Way to get them pissed off, have this very manipulative doctor do some manipulation, which he warns her about at every single stage of the book.
Yes.
You know, he does say he is going to die. You should, and he is actually dead from the top of the novel. You know, when you look back on it, his life could never have been saved. This is the kind of thing I like. I like tragedy. I like, you know, getting tears out of people. That was me squeezing a cloth.
And I mean, human nature is basically about writing a Doctor Who novel without Doctor Who in it.
Yes, it's the gap where the Doctor might be.
How can I put it? Is that something... What's a doctor-shaped hole look like? And don't say small and Scottish.
I think...
It's larger on the inside.
I think often a character is defined by what happens if they're not there. Superman 2. The hero's journey... about him giving up what he is to see what it is to be human. You also see what he is when he is not human.
Yeah.
And that was the idea of human nature. Yeah. And I wish somebody would revisit that, really. I don't know why they don't.
Earlier this year, I popped into the studio where they were recording the Benny play The End of the World, which was directed by Lisa and for a change gave the lion's share of the performance to Stephen Fuel, who had played her sidekick Jason in 15 previous plays. And after the studio footage, you'll hear my interview with Stephen.
Of a realisation.
Yeah, exact. You know, you took the words right off my page when you said you need Benny out of the way. So that beat, you can really use that beat as a sort of light bulb over the head moment. That would be good. And Stephen, they should. I know. I'll stop you if I have to. Can you really keep the energy up at that point? I think you're kind of driving to the end now.
Yeah.
So at that point, you can really take the baton up pace-wise. It's kind of desperation, I suppose, to a certain extent. And the when it says gotcha, I'll tell Benny. You can really put that in inverted commas. That's another light bulb thing. Thinking it's going to really floor him, and I was going to say do it like you did the time before, because you can that was fantastic. I mean, we can always use that take anyway, the end of that last section. But yeah, really pong that one, brilliant. Okay. So let's go from the bottom of 46 to the top of 48. Thank you very much.
So no one else can catch you unawares again. No more unexpected Dalek invasions, for example.
How long after casting Leeson did they cast you as Jason? Because you were in the first six that they did.
I can't remember. I suppose it must have been pretty quick. I think she said she'd got it, and I immediately sent her a postcard saying, well, if there are any jobs, let me know. And luckily there were. So, yeah, no looking back.
So you'd been a fan of the Doctor Who novels, the TV series as well? Or?
Well, yeah, growing up, obviously. And I guess the series finished when, oh God, what year would it be? A couple of years before I went off to uni. And a ridiculous amount of time on my hands, apart from reading Victorian novels, I started reading the stories that Benny was part of.
And did you ever imagine yourself as a rogue writer of xenopornography?
Not when I was reading them, no, funnily enough. Yeah, no, they were, I mean, brilliantly written and some real discoveries. And I guess kind of because the series had ended on TV, there were no kind of new, well, very few kind of new recruits, and the readership was kind of ageing. And as a result, the writers were able to kind of play around with the format, and of course Benny was the upshot of that, who was breaking a lot of new ground that in fact kind of pop culture followed quite after, you know, the kind of leading female character, you know, that kind of Bridget Jonesy kind of, you know, Benny had a diary a good few years before Bridget Jones did. And she was genuinely kind of off the time, or ahead of her time, actually, in terms of that kind of character. Yeah.
But I mean, there are very few, just sort of looking at Jason's character and Benny's without the Doctor, I mean, there are very few kind of male-female relationships in genre where they're actually both fairly equal. I mean, there's sort of the X-Files, but generally, if there's a strong female lead, then the guy's fairly subservient. Or if there's a strong male lead, then the female sidekick's fairly subservient. It's good to have, I mean, I guess, a fairly rounded character for you to take on from the start.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think format-wise, when we started doing the audio adventures, they were a double CD format, so you needed to have a double story strand to keep the story up, otherwise it would just been event after event happening to the central character. So they did that old trick of splitting the story two ways, in the main that did mean that both characters had a strength. There's no mistaking though that Benny is the central character, and always very, very conscious that you're there to illuminate her rather than the opposite way around, and the scripts and the characters are very carefully constructed with that in mind, I think. It's funny, it's just a different job role. If you're leading a company, you approach things in a different way, and I'm very conscious that Jason is always there to kind of, what's the word, not subservient, but he's not a
comic foil either. He's just sort of,
yeah, he's there to serve the story sometimes, and to illuminate, bring something out in Benny's normally there for a reason.
Quite often, almost as the everyman, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, yeah, because, I mean, Benny's one of the few spin-offs that can do the future, because it's on radio, so we don't have to pay for special effects or different cozzies every week. It can do the future, which is great in story terms. But it means that you need some kind of reference point, and Jason, I think, is the kind of reference point. He's kind of contemporary England, London, home counties, and he kind of brings that kind of down to earthness. Some of the writers really picked up on that. Yeah. Mm.
Next, you'll hear a couple of interviews recorded by Sermon Gurria for his forthcoming coffee table book about Benny, The Inside Story, with actress Sophie Aldred about meeting her successor in the TARDIS, and then with writer Gareth Roberts about writing an early Benny novel.
And you, I don't know if you're aware, but you're kind of indirectly responsible for Lisa getting the part of Benny, because it was through I Was a Doctor Who Monster, which is how she met Gary and things.
Well, I do remember having a phone call. Gary rang me up and he said, Sophie, can I ask you a personal question? I thought, oh my God,
oh dear.
You know, what's Gary going to ask? He said, what's Lisa like? Well, you know, and I said, she's great, you know, she's really good. Do you think she would be good to do, you know, something quite a big part? I said, yeah, it would be wonderful, because she has always really wanted to. She got killed off in Casualty, and then she was killed off in Doctor Who, and she just has been, she was waiting to get her teeth into something where she could really kind of not get killed off straight away. And she really kind of rose to the challenge. And I think, you know, I think it was great of Gary to sort of ask me, but I think he made a very good choice. And I think, you know, she was well up for it. And she's incredible. She's a very professional and very conscientious worker, as well as being a really nice person. So I had no hesitation in giving her a good reference.
Excellent. And then you did two more plays with Lisa. This time with Sylvester as well.
Yes. What was funny was sharing Sylvester with somebody. I felt quite strange about that, because I'd never really done that before. Benny and Ace were so, I don't know, chalk and cheese should work quite well, but somehow, I don't know whether it was particularly successful. I felt very much that Ace was just, you know, kind of going, come on, let's blow something up.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's not dissimilar from what writers were feeling in the books as well.
Yes.
And that's why Ace was written out.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Did you find that you were proprietorial about Sylvester during, if you were
absolutely
staring daggers at Lisa across
no,
the
not
biscuits?
At all. No, no, I'll share him out with anyone. Anyone who wants him. No, I mean, Lisa and I were already kind of good friends then anyway. I mean, I think Ace would felt very proprietorial, and you know, wouldn't have wanted to, like in Battlefield, you know, wouldn't have wanted anyone else to get their hands on him. But no, we're very
open.
Yes, an open relationship. Yeah. Now he goes off with all sorts of people.
I know, it's shocking.
And I don't care.
He's just had Marianne Dubois from The Living Daylights.
Has he indeed?
Yes, he has. Yeah.
I'll be speaking to him about that one then.
Just wait till he gets home.
Yes, exactly.
You also had to put Benny in the book.
Yes.
Who I assume was reasonably late into the writing. You would have had the notes that...
What happened was, I remember, because I, in 1990, during the summer, it was the last year where you could claim the dole as a student.
Right.
And I wrote my first few chapters of The Higher Science then, sent them off to Virgin, got a really nice letter. It was W.H. Allen, I still got the letter actually. It came back and it said, you've done very well. Unfortunately, there are a number of spelling mistakes. Thank you for sending us your stuff, which was great. But you know, that was amazing, great. But I waited about a year, never heard anything, and then I'd moved and I got some redirected post one Friday when I got back from college, and I opened it up, and I just remember thinking, what's this? Opened it up, and I just remember seeing the words Professor Benny Summerfield at the top of the key. What the hell's this? And then I realised what it was. It was all the bump, and then a letter from Peter, covering note, saying, would you like to think about this, rejig it for this lineup, and resubmit? Which was great, you know, amazing. And I just remember, just at the very first time I saw the name and thought, that's the new companion, the very first thought I had in my mind was the jazz singer Bertice Redding,
right,
who had died
okay
very young, actually, very sad, you remember her?
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, she's going to be a big fat mama. that was, you know, that obviously lasted about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
When I thought about that, and then I saw the illustrations that I think Lee Sullivan had done.
That's right.
So obviously, yeah. But that was my first thought. I remember that, and I remember just thinking as I read the outline, this is just brilliant. Mm-hmm. This is going to be fantastic. Because it was so much more my kind of I think the trouble with Ace was that you know, if the series had continued into 1990, she would have gone in another 6 or 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a really nice self-contained story, but because she kind of lingered on far beyond, you know, the character's shelf life, really.
Yep.
And it was just a real breath of fresh air to think, oh, there's going to be a new companion.
And Benny was created with novels in mind. She had a backstory.
Yes,
she had issues.
Yes, exactly. And also she, just the whole tone of that thing that Cornell wrote for the description of the character was just really liberating, I thought. It was like, you can finally sort of chuck out that kind of slight children's TV feel that Ace has. And you know, if you're going to be selling these novels to a smaller but really dedicated audience of ideally, you know, intelligent, articulate people that read a lot, which is what Doctor Who fans can be,
yeah,
were, then this is a perfect character. I just love that. I mean, I remember it saying things like, think of, you know, Emma Thompson and the Tall Guy, and Emma Peel and all those kind of things, Romana too, and all that kind of thing. And I thought, oh, this is going to be lovely, because it immediately gives you a different angle on the Doctor.
Sure.
Like, if you watch the new series this year, I mean, the Doctor seems so different than he did with Rose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of the reasons why the format's so brilliant. You don't realise it until they start doing it again in the new series, and you think, that's another reason why it really worked. Because every time you get a new person, the Doctor changes a bit.
Yeah, no, this is what Terrence was saying.
Yeah, it's great. So you get and I just love the idea of the McCoy Doctor, but with a companion that was... I know people always say this thing about more of an equal, and I don't think it's more a feeling of having two leads, if you know what I mean. And it just means you've got... I mean, it was a really, really strong... defined character straight away with a really recognisable sense of humour and a take on the world. And I remember writing the first scene that I did with her, where she was in a bar on a space station or something, and then going in to see the Doctor carrying some carry-outs from the bar and all that kind of thing, and it was just such a feeling of liberation that is something that, you know, had never been done, and it was the feeling of something new was wonderful. You know, that was really good fun to do.
If you'd like to hear and read more about Professor Bernice Summerfield, there are 40 audio CDs and 2 dozen books available in specialist shops that generally have the word Planet in their title, as well as direct from the publisher Big Finish. You can read a couple of early Benny novels at the BBC's website, and if you can answer the following question, what is Professor Bernice Summerfield's middle name, and send the answer to backprojection@hotmail.com, that's backprojection@hotmail.com, you can win a copy of the forthcoming short story collection Missing Adventures. For links to relevant websites and more info about tonight's show, please visit www.readyformyclosesup.blogspot.com. And to play out, here's another extract from the next CD in the range, The Wake.
If you think I'm spending what's left of my life going through some silly list of art treasures and bijouteries...
If you had looked at the catalogue, you might have noticed that I happen to own the Riddell manuscript. It's well worth a read.
That rings a bell somewhere. Oh, wait a minute. Wasn't he the guy who claimed to have found the Fountain of Forever? You know, stand under it and get eternal life, or if you'd rather, it will cure all...
It's not much to offer, but it's a start. Something that it just might be worth spending the next few weeks working on. I have a couple of leads we could follow up.
Oh, come on. I'm not falling for that one. You just want to keep me occupied. Could be something to do to take my mind off things. It's just a legend. isn't it?
Yes. Just a legend, like the Oracle of the Lost. If you're not sure, why not ask the Oracle of the Lost?
No. No, no questions. Not now. I'd rather live with hope. Oh, wait here just 1 minute while I get my rucksack.